You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, author Rax King says there's no reason to feel guilty about our guilty pleasures. She tells us why in her book, Tacky, Love Letters to the Worst Culture We Have to Offer. Find out more today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, a pair of recent studies looking at white-tailed deer in Iowa and Ohio found the SARS-CoV-2 virus, that's the one that causes COVID-19 in people, in more than 30% of the deer population in each of those states. There's no evidence that deer can spread the virus to humans. There hasn't been a similar study in Wisconsin, but the state health department recommends that Wisconsin hunters take a couple extra precautions during this current gun deer hunting season. This isn't the only virus that can move between humans and other animals, and our next guest is on the lookout for germs that jump species. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about animals and the coronavirus? What concerns do you have? Are you a hunter or someone in your family or network? Have you been following this news? What do you think of the guidance, such as wearing a mask while field dressing a deer? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tony Goldberg is the John D. MacArthur Chair and Professor in the UW-Madison Department of Pathobiological Sciences in the School of Veterinary Medicine. Tony, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be here.
Well, we've got these studies out, not peer-reviewed, but the authors thought this could be a big deal. We're going to get it out there. What is your reaction to what you're seeing in these studies of deer?
Well, I think it's pretty scary. I mean, when SARS coronavirus 2 first emerged in people, we quickly discovered that it was most likely a bat virus that had gotten into people. So a lot of people, including myself, started to look at bats, thinking, gee, what if it went from people into bats in North America? But at the beginning, nobody thought deer. So it was pretty surprising, although some early research on the susceptibility of different animals did predict that deer might be a problem. So we should have listened more.
It seems like the scary part, as of right now, it doesn't seem like there are cases of deer to human transmission, but the idea of yet another animal, I guess, reservoir of this virus, what do we worry about there?
Well, that's right. The fear here is that white-tailed deer could be a reservoir. And by a reservoir, we mean an animal species that has enough virus in it to serve as a source of infection for us. One that most of us are familiar with is West Nile virus. It lives in birds and mosquitoes, and there's enough infected birds and mosquitoes out there that every once in a while it gets transmitted to people and makes us sick. Once you have that situation where there's another species with the virus, it becomes a whole different ballgame with respect to getting rid of it, because you know it's tough enough convincing people to get vaccinated, but try telling deer to get vaccinated. They certainly won't listen.
I know we have cases of virus transmission from non-human animals to humans. It's what causes a lot of our most famous diseases. It seems like the one that causes COVID-19 in humans, it can go to a bunch of different animals. I've seen cases of it being picked up in zoo animals, mink populations. It seems to spread quickly and be very hazardous there. Now, deer seem to carry it. No illness, I guess, associated with it. Is this unusual versatility for a virus?
This is unusual versatility for a virus, but not for a coronavirus. So different viral families, like the coronaviruses or the flaviviruses where West Nile belongs, or the filoviruses where Ebola virus belongs, they have different host ranges. And it's been known for a while that the coronaviruses can have a broad host range. We saw this with SARS Classic, as my friends like to say, back in 2003, when there were civets and other animals implicated in the transmission of the virus from bats to humans, and MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, and the virus that causes that is known to infect camels. So these viruses are pretty tricky in that regard.
I know one virus that we humans have managed to eradicate is smallpox, but my understanding there, Tony, is it didn't have this other animal reservoir. With a virus that can live on in so many different species, does that make the idea of eradication impossible?
Well, that kind of depends on whether or not deer turn out to be a reservoir. As the CDC and everyone is saying, there's no evidence now that deer can transmit the virus to people. But there's no evidence that they can't. All we have is lack of evidence. So if we, you know, hypothetically imagine that deer could transmit the virus to people, that is a bit of a game changer, because if we got rid of it in people, it could just come back to us from deer or from some other species. So that's a concern. The other concern is that what went into deer from people might not be the same as what could come out of deer. Viruses have this pesky propensity to evolve. So we would expect that a virus that got into deer might undergo changes and mutations and evolution and could spin off new variants that, you know, in a worst case scenario could be more harmful or even could escape immunity that we might have naturally or from vaccines. That's all speculation, but these are the sort of nightmare scenarios that are spinning around in people's heads right now.
Talking to Tony Goldberg, professor of epidemiology in the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Looking at news, a couple studies in Iowa and Ohio found the virus that causes COVID-19 in us people found it pretty common in deer. Talking about that and more general questions about viruses that bounce from species to species, you can join in with your thoughts, your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tony, I've talked to you over the years about how we try to watch for viruses and other species that might be likely candidates to cross over to humans. What is our radar like? How do we start to try to suss out among the many, many viruses out there, what likely culprits are?
That is the $64,000, or I'm dating myself, $64 million question. The ability to predict which of the millions upon millions of viruses in nature might be the next one to jump and cause a pandemic is the focus of a great deal of research right now, as you might imagine. There are new programs that the NIH and the National Science Foundation looking specifically at that. The best predictor we have right now is, are they related to something that's jumped over in the past? So SARS coronavirus 2 is related to SARS virus, which jumped over into people from bats. Influenza viruses jump over frequently from animals into people, so we can expect them to as well. Flaviviruses like West Nile virus jump from animals to people on a regular basis. So that's our best bet. But going beyond that, there's all I can say is there's an enormous amount of research in every field from molecular biology to computer science trying to get at this very question.
Do we have consistent support funding-wise for this kind of research? Because I've heard tell, at least during that SARS outbreak that you mentioned, people were really interested in funding research on coronaviruses in animal species. SARS went away, and maybe some of that interest did too. Do we have kind of peaks and valleys in when it comes to supporting this kind of research and analysis?
Unfortunately, we do. I kind of have a feeling we're going to have a sustained peak right now because of what's going on in the world. But as you know from what you do for a living, things have news cycles. So it's difficult to perpetuate the public or the politicians' attention on certain issues. But I think we may be at a turning point with COVID-19 in that I don't think there's anybody on the planet who doubts the usefulness of being able to predict future pandemics and maybe stop them. So my hope is that we are seeing the beginning of a new era in pandemic research.
With this pandemic, there's been interest from the start in the animal origins of this particular virus. You mentioned bats. People have pointed toward pangolins. What are you watching for in the ongoing effort to figure out where this came from?
I'm watching for someone to find a population most likely of bats that has a lot of a virus that is very similar to SARS coronavirus 2, if not identical, and yet they're healthy, because that would be evidence of a reservoir. So I'm in the bat camp for sure. We know of many viruses in bats that are very similar to SARS coronavirus 2, and I imagine some cave somewhere in the world where these bats are just living peacefully with this virus and and not getting sick. And it was just unlucky that something happened and they were able to transmit it to a person who started the pandemic.
We're talking to Tony Goldberg, professor of epidemiology in the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, talking about viruses that jump from one species to another. The species include humans, of course. After some recent research on SARS-CoV, the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19 in particular, being found in deer in neighboring Iowa and also over in Ohio, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more research on this, on deer in Wisconsin, say, in particular, since that hasn't been studied yet, as far as I know? Do you have questions for our guest about viruses that jump from other species to us humans and how that all works, how we try to detect that, maybe prevent it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you're a hunter about to go out hunting, are you going to follow the guidelines to wear a mask? Not while you're out hunting itself, but while you are dressing the deer you are hoping to get. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk about deer and other animals carrying the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 in us humans. Tony Goldberg is with us, professor of epidemiology in the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jim joins us now in Hartford. Jim, hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jim?
I want to say, Tony, what are you, nuts? What did we just go through? Where millions of people died all over the globe. There, you have positive words for coronavirus going away. It's morphing. It's changing. It's never going to go away. There's a lot of experts who say it's going to be a human companion for the rest of our lives and beyond. No, stop playing with viruses that may protect us in the future. Will they leak? And there's other accidents. How far are we ahead now?
Oh, I think I see where you're going, Jim. Tony, Jim, I think worried about if we're researching the virus, we risk exposing ourselves to whatever the next virus might be.
Well, there is that concern. And thanks, Jim, for the call. I would say that I agree with you. Most scientists think that we're not going to get rid of SARS coronavirus 2, the virus that causes COVID-19, very quickly or at all. And in fact, there are about 20 to 30 human respiratory viruses that have evolved to become sort of mild, like the common cold virus. But almost all of those, if not every single one of them, began as a virus of animals. So it's just a fact of how we live as people and a fact of life on this globe that we interact with animals. So there's a certain level of risk that is just a baseline for contracting new viruses from animals. And they often evolve into human pathogens over time, but that's a long process. So I agree with your sentiment. And I would say that in terms of going out and studying them, we finally are at a point in human history where we have the tools and the knowledge to get out ahead of these things. So I think now the benefits of finding the next one before it hits outweigh any risks that we may pose by going out into nature and looking.
Thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. We got an email from Mary who says, critters like rodents, fox, raccoons, and coyotes can feed on deer carcasses and frequent the same areas as deer. Are these animals at risk of infection from eating deer, or would it only spread through the air between animals? So other mammals in the neighborhood of deer, do we have a worry there, Tony?
Great question. This is one of the things very much on the minds of epidemiologists and wildlife biologists. We are fearful that this may not be just a deer thing. We already know, for example, that mink can get SARS coronavirus 2 and can transmit it and get sick from it. And there's plenty of mink in the woods where there's deer, and they would very happily eat a deer carcass. What we don't know is whether consumption of infected deer meat can cause infection in the animal that eats it. We think that the mode of transmission of this virus and the overwhelming majority of cases is respiratory and through aerosol, so sneezing, coughing, stuff like that. But, you know, I wouldn't eat certain types of meat from a deer that I knew was infected with COVID just out of an abundance of caution. So, I think that we're going to see experiments and field studies looking at this question exactly. But, it's plausible to imagine that other animals in the woods of Wisconsin or elsewhere might contract the virus.
Talking to Tony Goldberg, professor of epidemiology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, looking at viruses that cross from one species to another with new research finding the virus that causes COVID-19 in humans, finding it in deer populations in Iowa and Ohio, not studied yet here in Wisconsin. Still time for your calls with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. We heard from Tom in northern Wisconsin who couldn't stay on the line. Tom wants to know how the virus could have been passed to deer in the first place. I don't think we have a solid answer on that, Tony. What kind of things would we be looking for, though?
That's a great question. And these are all great questions because they're all the big questions people are asking. One thing I got to say is that the paper that inspired this recent cycle of news about transmission to deer showed that it didn't just happen once. It actually happened multiple times in deer in Iowa. So it wasn't just a single isolated event. So we have to think of something that people frequently do. It's rare, as I'm sure you agree, that to be like standing in the supermarket checkout line with a deer. Mm-hmm. So it's not something like that. It's open to question, but my guess is that it's probably something that's transmitted through the environment in rare cases. So if I were to sneeze or cough or spit in the woods, and a couple of minutes later, a deer comes by and sniffs it, that could do it. People have talked about water. Maybe there's contaminated water and deer might drink it. So we're really not sure, but there's plenty of examples in nature of human viruses that move to animals, including respiratory viruses. And even though we never really know exactly how it happens, it does seem to happen.
Let's go back to our callers now. Todd is with us in Madison. Todd, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Todd?
My question is, as a deer hunter, I haven't gotten one yet, but are there any precautions you would recommend after you harvest the deer for processing it in the field, gutting it, perhaps skinning it, and preparing it for butchery?
Todd, that's a great question. And Tony, I pulled this up from the Department of Health Services there. They suggest, in addition to the usual hygiene you'd want, wearing a mask while doing that field dressing, limit cutting into and handling the deer's lungs, throat, and mouth nasal cavity, so respiratory system, limiting that to only what is necessary. And if you're immunocompromised, consider asking for assistance with carcass processing and handling. Tony, what do you think of that advice? Maybe an abundance of caution, but what do you think?
Yeah, I have the same website right up on my screen in front of me, Rob, because I anticipated this question. That's a good question. First of all, hope you get a deer. Second of all, what's going on right now is that DHS is recommending measures that are general hygiene measures out of an abundance of caution. So if I were out field dressing a deer, I would wear a mask because, I'm a risk-averse epidemiologist. the other thing is, I think generally being aware of germs. It's not just SARS coronavirus 2. There's bacteria, there's other viruses. We all know about chronic wasting disease and we have to be careful about that. So I think just keeping a mindset that you want to minimize direct contact with tissues and bodily fluids, as we say, of deer, that you want to wash your hands thoroughly when you're done, that you want to cook your meat thoroughly, and that you want to avoid certain organs or parts of a deer are all good things, even without SARS coronavirus 2 in the picture.
Todd, great question. Thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. John is with us in Oconomowoc. John, hi.
Hi. I am calling. I'm a dairy farmer, and we have vaccinated dairy cattle for rotacorona for about 30 years or more. And I'm curious if that offers coverage for COVID-19 or if COVID-19 is too specific or the vaccine not specific enough. Furthermore, I'm curious if the deer are actually getting COVID-19 or just rotacoronavirus in general.
John, thanks for the call. Tony.
Good. Great questions, John. First of all, as for your second question, the deer are not getting sick, or at least not getting very sick. Even in experimental infections of deer, they just kind of get maybe mild respiratory signs. And we're certainly not hearing reports of deer running around the woods, coughing and sneezing and wheezing. So they're not getting sick. As to your question about the cattle coronaviruses, that's a really interesting one, because people may not realize that there are many coronaviruses of domestic animals that we already know about. You mentioned the bovine variant. There's a feline one in cats. There's canine ones, porcine ones, and pigs. The bad news is, in answer to your question, no. A coronavirus like the cattle one would be different enough from SARS coronavirus 2 that it almost certainly would not offer cross protection, as we say. The good news is that cows are a species that doesn't look from their genetics like they're going to be very susceptible to the virus. Now, you never know, because it's not just genetics, but they didn't come up as super high risk in the initial analyses like deer did. So we can hope that SARS coronavirus 2 is going to leave Wisconsin's dairy industry alone.
Tony, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us. That's Tony Goldberg, professor of epidemiology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, talking about coronavirus in different species. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, gas prices up, especially compared to a year ago, not the highest in recent memory. We'll find out what's driving those prices. That and more tomorrow on Central Time.